Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
I hope you're well. It's Mental Health Monday for another week. Welcome to the programme. My name is Mick Coyle, taking a look at mental health matters and talking about them in an open and honest way. Now, coming up in a few moments' time, we're going to be speaking to one of our youngest ever contributors to Mental Health Monday and her mum in the studio. So stand by for Martha's story and Lynn's story. That's on the way here on Mental Health Monday. But we're talking today, and you may have woken up to the news that there's going to be a massive expansion of mental health services, creating 21,000 new jobs in the NHS in England over the next 4 years. This sounds, on the face of it, like this is massively positive news from a government's point of view in terms of their commitment to mental health services. Let's take a look at some of the detail. The government is promising to increase the number of nurses, therapists and psychiatrists to treat an extra 1 million people by the year 2021. So we're what? 3.5 years away from that, 4 years away from that, a massive expansion of mental health services, 21,000 new jobs in the NHS in England over the next 4 years, and the government promised to increase the number of nurses, therapists and psychiatrists to treat an extra 1 million people by 2021. Now, Jeremy Hunt is the health secretary. He's been setting out what this cash is, where it's going to be spent and the difference it's going to be making to Sarah Jane Mee. Let's take a listen.
Well, I think it's been very warmly welcomed by doctors and nurses. The Royal College of Psychiatrists has given it a very warm welcome. And in fact, these plans have been drawn up both by the NHS and by charities who are very involved in the delivery of mental health care, precisely to make sure that we don't just give a number and say we'd like to treat 1 million more people by 2021, which is a nice sounding number, but actually back it up with the hard increases in mental health nurses, psychiatrists, therapists, all the people you need to deliver a big change like that. And okay. It's going to be a very big effort, but we have increased the number of people in mental health provision by 32,000 since 2010. This is another 21,000 posts. And I think if we go hard at it, we can deliver it. And it's very important we should, because although we have one of the biggest expansions of mental health provision in Europe, we still have too many tragedies, too many young lives cut short because we're not helping people quickly enough.
It's widely agreed there is definitely need for improvement. And yes, it has been welcomed by doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals. But with a degree of scepticism, you talk there about hard increases in numbers. They're talking about hard cash. They need hard cash to make it work. How are you going to fund this?
Well, this is part of a £1 billion annual increase that we're committing to. So we are paying for this with new additional extra money.
And where is that coming from?
Well, it's from the settlement that we gave the NHS at the last spending review, which we promised an extra £8 billion a year. Part of that is an extra £1 billion to mental health. And I should say that compared to just 3 years ago, we're spending about £1.5 billion more on mental health in real terms. That means about 120,000 more people every year getting treatment.
But as I say, we're not... Sorry, I do just want to interrupt you because I know that you have limited time. You have other places to go today. So I just want to get into this a little bit more. You have promised this money. Again, I'll ask you to be specific about where it's come from. It's one thing promising it, but when you look at recruitment across the NHS at the moment, you are struggling to recruit in other areas. I mean, it comes at a time when NHS digital figures show that over 86,000 posts advertised within the NHS in the first quarter of this year, a large number you simply can't fill. So you do wonder how you're going to recruit an extra 21,000 nurses and other professionals to work within mental health. What's the incentive? How are you going to get them into the NHS? Because you've got a 1% pay cap still in force, and you also have the uncertainty of Brexit. EU health professionals don't really want to come to the UK at the moment. It's not very attractive to them.
Well, the reason that we are able to make this commitment. First of all, it's against a background. Yes, the vacancies are going up, but so are the numbers of people working in the NHS. We've got nearly 12,000 more doctors in the NHS than we had 7 years ago. So the overall numbers are going up, but so is the demand because of an ageing population. And I would question that the NHS is an unattractive place to work. Just 2 weeks ago, an independent American think tank, the Commonwealth Fund, said that the NHS was the best healthcare system in the world, better than France, better than Germany, better than Australia, America, many other countries. But we have our pressures, just like everywhere has their pressures. And part of this is about training more young people to go into medicine, and that's why we've increased the number of training places at medical schools by a quarter. Very big decision that Theresa May took just after she became Prime Minister. But part of it is also encouraging people who have been trained in the past to come back into working for the NHS.
There you go. That's Jeremy Hunt speaking to Sarah Jane Mee. He insists that a plan is achievable to get 21,000 new jobs in the NHS in England, looking at mental health and people working in mental health when it comes to positions, nurses, therapists and psychiatrists. Let's take a listen to what the Labour Party is saying on this matter. Shadow Mental Health Minister Barbara Keeley offering her insight from a Labour point of view.
Well, I think we need to see where is the money coming from. Is there enough money? That's the first thing. And, you know, is it going to be enough? The £1.3 billion which he's talked about is actually money which is committed for other things and is only part funding this recruitment drive. And as you say, it's become very difficult recruiting nurses because of the 1% pay cap, and because, of course, they've scrapped the nurse bursary. This government has scrapped the nurse bursary, making it harder for nurses to train. And what we need to see is a greater deal of ring-fencing funding. During the general election campaign, Labour talked about ring-fencing funding. There's a great deal of robbing Peter to pay Paul that goes on in the NHS, with funding that's meant, say, for children and adolescent mental health services going for other things, because at local level, the other priorities drive things. So if there's a need for other funding, it doesn't get used for mental health, and that's really a big difference. And of course that means that the staff working in mental health services are stretched, the workload goes up and up and up. We know that waiting times for all kinds of treatment are a problem, are really stretching now. So workload is difficult, the pay is capped, and it just, you know, that's a crisis situation, really. It's not a good background for recruitment.
There you go. That's Barbara Keeley from the Labour Party talking about her perspective from a mental health point of view. I think it's a case of wait and see in terms of these figures and how they play out and how, over the course of the next, 4 years or so, people are able to be drafted into the NHS to work within the mental health services. But, of course, the other thing is that not all of these psychiatrists, not all the counsellors, particularly those at the grassroots level, work within the NHS as well. There's plenty of organisations that work on a voluntary or charity basis who'll be thinking, well, if there is some money available, we're doing the work today and we're losing our funding as a result. So it'll be interesting to see how that money works its way down into the system, whether or not NHS CCGs decide to actually start funding charitable services or extending the funding to charitable service as well. But either way, interesting time ahead. We'll keep our eye on it here on Mental Health Monday.
Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Okay, so it's Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. My name is Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. So today we're going to be joined in the studio by one of our youngest ever contributors to Mental Health Monday, who's going to explain some of the things that she's faced as a young person, but she's also put together a speech for her GCSEs about the importance of mental health services for young people. We'll meet Martha in a few moments' time. She's 15 years of age. First up, though, we've got Mum, Lynn, in the studio. Lynn, great to see you. Thank
Morning.
You for your time. Obviously, as a parent, first and foremost, you try and do your best, don't you, to try and make sure everything's, you know, as you want it in your child's life as well. But you became aware that Martha wasn't having the best time of it. And I imagine at that point, that's the point as a parent where you're thinking, right, something's got to be done. What can be done about it?
Absolutely. But you're also reliant on your child, you know, wanting to get some help, and that's the first hurdle, really, isn't it, sort of having that conversation. But yeah, certainly sort of a couple of years ago now, Martha changed friendship groups in school and things just didn't feel right. She didn't seem to be being the old Martha, and, you know, tensions at home and things like that. And then one day I got a call from the school to say that one of the teachers had noticed that she'd been cutting her arms, which, you know, is a sign really that things aren't right at all. But Martha was good. She came and talked to me about it, and we went straight away to see our GP. One thing I want to say is that every professional we've dealt with along the way has been absolutely fantastic. It's just there aren't enough of them and they're not there quick enough. But our GP was great. They did a referral through to CAMHS, and we got the letter back from CAMHS saying, unfortunately, we haven't got the resources to see you. You'll have to go to a voluntary organisation. So the GP referred us on to YPASS. And again, we got a letter saying, unfortunately, there's a long waiting list. So from that February, it was the end of August when we first sat down with someone. And that was a really difficult time because that was a time when we'd all acknowledged we needed a bit of help, but it just kind of wasn't there.
And in terms of that frustration from your point of view as the parent, was there a sense, you know, well, come on, somebody, I've done all the right things here. I feel like I've played the game in the right way, if you like. You're just waiting for the game to catch up with you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even went and tried to find some private kind of counselling services, but I think services for young people are so specialised that you need the right people. And that's why organisations like YPASS are great, because they're people who've chosen and want to work with young people, who've got the skills and experience and knowledge to work with young people. So it's not something you can just pick off the shelf or go through the Yellow Pages and find a counsellor. It needs that kind of expertise. And the wait was a bit of an ordeal for all of us, I think. And, you know, things sort of went bad along the way and we ended up in hospital a couple of times. The irony of it all is if you do end up in hospital, you're seen straight away, which is a bit perverse, really, because we wanted to avoid that happening. But it was only when that happened that we actually got access to CAMHS.
Yeah, and we'll make the point right at the start that, you know, this it's not a historic case that we're talking about here. We're talking in the recent future, but yeah. We will make the point for people listening that if you do contact your GP, waiting lists are not always the same, might not have the same sort of length, although many people will have experienced this in the past. There are often new ways of getting involved with organisations like the Young Persons Advisory Service. They've subsequently opened their new centres as well. So we don't want to put people off in terms of speaking out because of the threat of a potential
wait. You can self-refer to YPASS as well. So if you feel you want the help and support of an organisation like that, you don't even have to go to a teacher or to your GP. You can actually contact YPASS direct and they'll speak to you about what's best services they've got for you.
What difference do you now note in your daughter from the mouth you didn't really know?
Well, she's back to being mine. So thanks to Maureen and YPASS mainly. But thanks to Martha as well, because she put lots of effort in to, you know, turning things around. She's in a new school. The school have been tremendously supportive. She's back to... Her grades are creeping back up again. She's back to doing a bit of sport, which she was a great swimmer and she dropped all that, and she's back to getting to the gym at least a couple of times a week. So, you know, it's all on the up now, and it was thanks to having access to specialist services. But that big concern is there that I know YPASS have faced 50% funding cuts this year, and I just worry that there'll be young people that don't have access to their wonderful services.
Do you fancy coming on, Martha, and having a chat with us?
Yeah.
Excellent. Martha's here. She's 15 years of age. Sounds like you had a tough time of it, Martha.
Yeah,
Terms of when you were growing up, did you ever think about mental health? It's not something really necessarily you consider as a young person. It just feels like it's you, I guess.
No, not really, because it's not really noticed as much as physical health. So,
And that was one of the things you wrote about really in school, wasn't it?
And when you were putting it together, so you're about to go into your GCSE year, but you were putting together a speech as part of your English class, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of mental health, and you raised some issues in that. Do you want to? You can either do the speech for us if you want, or give us a sense of what's in it. It's entirely up to you. Do you want to read it out?
Yeah,
brilliant.
If one person in every four had the flu in school, the school would be shut down. So why is it not the same for mental health? Mental health is a person's condition based on their psychological and emotional well-being. Just because you can't see someone's mental health, it doesn't mean it's not important. If you came into school with a broken leg, you wouldn't expect your teacher to tell you to walk on it. So why are people with depression, anxiety, etc. told to get on with it? Over the last 25 years, the rate of depression has increased by 70%, and the number of teenagers being admitted to A&E with serious self-harm or attempted suicide has doubled since 2009. If the numbers are rising, why is nothing being done? Research by mental health charity Young Minds has found that exams are a trigger of mental illness. With more pressure to leave school with outstanding GCSEs and A-levels, I believe more services should be available for teenagers. Charities such as CAMHS and YPASS offer support to young people during these hard times. CAMHS offers counselling to help children make a plan for the future. YPASS offers support groups which allow young people to socialise with people who are going through similar problems as them. Both of these services are completely confidential unless they believe a young person could be at risk. However, the government is making cuts to mental health services, with over 20 people in every branch losing their job. The average waiting time to be seen by a counsellor has doubled since 2015, meaning it could take up to 12 months to be seen. I feel that mental health is important in order to make a good relationship in life. 60% of people have said that a relationship has had a positive impact on their mental health. Mental health is important to handle the ups and downs of life, also to maintain a good physical state and well-being. To conclude, I believe in order to make a good change to the rise in numbers in mental health diagnostics and number of suicides, we should teach children about mental health from a young age so they know that feeling upset sometimes is okay. More funding should be put into services that help young people in order to have a shorter waiting time and more staff. Also, I believe that it is important to have a trained counsellor in every school to ensure that children have someone to talk to who they can trust.
Well, we. How old are you? And that was presumably you'd read up a lot about mental health and some of the facts and the stats around that. Obviously, you had your own personal experience, and then as you read up on it, you, I guess, got an idea of what was happening around the rest of the country as well.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel there, where you realised how big this is as an issue?
I don't know. It's quite sad, but at the same time, it's good that they're getting more help, but upsetting that people are losing their jobs who are actually putting in work to try and help people.
Tell us about that idea of putting a trained counsellor in every school. How do you think that might have helped somebody maybe in your situation?
Just having someone to talk to, like if you couldn't speak to someone at home, like your mum or dad or brother, sister, then having a counsellor in school means that you're in there 5 days a week. So it's having someone to talk to who you can trust, and I feel like it'd make a big difference.
Was there a reason, I mean, you got your mum in the studio now, and obviously, Lynn's, obviously, you've been tremendously supportive to your daughter. I mean, Martha, would you have preferred it to have been someone different? Did you feel like you didn't want to lump all your problems on your mum? Maybe you thought, oh, we don't want her to worry too much about my problems.
Well, when all the problems sort of started occurring, our relationship sort of went downhill, so I couldn't really speak to my mum, but now that, like, I've been going to see Maureen and going to Y-Pass, I don't know, it sort of brought us closer because just like moods and stuff are better and like I'm happier and stuff,
so with Maureen through Young Persons Advisory Service, you essentially had that figure you could go to where there was no baggage with that person. You could talk to them, they didn't know you before, you know, they judge you purely on who you are and as you sat for that half an hour that you're sitting in front of them.
Yeah.
And in terms of the idea of within a school environment, did you find that there was anyone in the school? Were there teachers who had been signposted as somebody you could go and speak to or anything like that?
Well, in my previous school, I didn't really feel as if there was anyone there, but changing school, there was a big, like there's a pastoral officer in our school. And it's just always, like, all the teachers are dead friendly. So it's even if there isn't a trained counsellor, you can sort of just talk to anyone. But having a trained counsellor would probably be more, like,
beneficial.
Yeah, beneficial.
And in terms of the, like, Maureen, in terms of what she offers when you talk to her, do you think that because of her training, because of her knowledge and expertise, you get a real sense that you're benefiting?
Yeah. It's just nice to have someone who actually knows what they're talking about instead of just talking to someone who doesn't. And not you, but
like it, mother, she means.
Lynn, Martha's obviously had a tough old time of it, 15 years of age as well, but she's put that down in writing in a way which expresses, I think, for a lot of people, some of the frustrations of the system within mental health, whether or not this funding announcement that we're hearing from today will make the difference by, you know, 4 years' time or however long it'll take to come fully on board as well. But if a 15-year-old can see it, then you would expect the Prime Minister, the Cabinet and people within senior office to be able to see these problems as well.
You would hope so. And I kind of switch hats a lot, you know, Mick. I work for the TUC, but I'm also chair of Health Watch in Liverpool. And through Health Watch, we have lots of people coming to the organisation with the frustration that there isn't enough out there, that people can't access services quick enough when they need to. And I think that frustration is felt by health professionals in the system as well and felt by teachers in schools. You know, there was an announcement really by Theresa May a little while back saying, well, we'll train teachers in mental health first aid. Teachers have got an awful lot on their plate and don't have the time to be professional counsellors. That's why Martha's idea of the being somebody trained as a professional in schools would be a solution to that. It'd be good to give teachers an awareness training so they can spot problems as they emerge, but they can't be expected to pick up everything. A lot of stuff falls to teachers these days, and it would be way too much. But again, you know, if you look at the services that we've got in and around Liverpool, excellent services, but the funding is on a year-by-year basis, and you've got people working in services who don't know whether they're going to be in a job in a year's time, and that must be intensely frustrating because they're people who really care about what they do. And that's one of the things that came across, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Meeting Maureen, that she really, really cared about what she did and wanted to do her absolute best for Martha. And in fact, you know, we had a couple of extra appointments that we weren't scheduled to have, but don't tell Monique from YPass, when we just needed, Martha just needed half an hour to get something out of her system. And Maureen was there for it. And I just hope everyone has a Maureen.
Everybody needs a Maureen. There you go. That's a decent thing to take away from the programme. If we take anything away from the programme today, we've got Lynn, we've got Martha in the studio. Mum Lynn and daughter Martha talking about mental health as young people. On the day that this new and extra funding is announced for mental health services as well, we'll be taking a look at that funding and how it gets spent over the course of the coming weeks, months and probably years. It's in place until 2021, and we'll continue this conversation next.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday. With Mick Coyle.
Okay, so it's Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. We've got Martha in the studio. We've got Lynn as well. Martha's been sharing her story. She's 15 years of age, and she's put together a fantastic speech, which we broadcast on the programme, talking about some of the issues around mental health. And Mum Lynn is in the studio too. Mum Lynn Collins from the TUC and also representative of Health Watch as well. So she's wearing all the hats. Which hat are you wearing now? You're your mum again?
I'm mum again now, yeah. I suppose so, but the things overlap, don't they? You know, you can't separate the personal from the professional sometimes. One of the things I picked up, though, just talking about the experiences Martha had, is the increased pressure that's on young people now. And Martha mentioned in her speech the pressure of exams. We've got GCSEs next year, so we might be knocking on Maureen's door again next year saying help. But it's not just GCSEs, is it? It's all the pressure around social media and how to look and what to wear and all of those things that, you know, are so much greater now than, you know, than when I, all those years ago, when I was young in the olden days, as Martha calls it.
Well, let's ask Martha about that. Martha, you know, in terms of, you know, you're 15 years of age, you got your GCSEs next year. So obviously, you know, you put your pressure on yourself to do that. And I'm sure you'll feel an element of pressure from your school or teachers. Don't worry about it for now. It'll be absolutely fine. But in terms of that other stuff, you know, the friends groups, the social media and all that, is that one of your concerns? Is that something that brought about maybe some of your issues?
Yeah, probably, because nowadays you have to look a certain way, like act a certain way, and if you don't, then you're like stereotyped as like weird. So starting off with like friendship groups, that was mainly some of the problems, sort of being like peer pressures into doing, getting up to no good and stuff like that. But seeing Maureen, like, I don't know, she convinced me that it weren't the right thing to do, when I thought it was the right thing to do.
And so. Do you think that's because she was from a completely different environment, that she sees the world in a slightly different way?
Yeah, probably.
To the way that you do?
Yeah.
And as you're still 15, so, you know, you're still right in the middle of, you know, school life and everything like that. Do you feel like you see the world in a different way than you did maybe a year ago?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
She can leave the house without makeup on now because she's got a bit more self-confidence and she believes in herself a bit more. And that's the big difference, I think, having someone to talk to away from your family makes, because you can explore all kinds of things that you might not want to say to your mum and dad. And there's lots of things I'm sure Martha's said to Maureen that I'll never, ever hear. But what I saw is every time she came out, she'd go in. Do you remember when we first used to go?
Yeah.
You'd go, I don't want to go, I've got nothing to say. And then she'd be dragged out because she was still talking. And she'd come out with a spring in her step and she'd be a little bit taller and feel a little bit better. And it was great to see her making all that progress, you know. And Maureen nominated you for one of YPass's awards for someone who's made the most progress. And you felt really good about that, didn't you?
Yeah.
You know, it made a real difference to you.
And was that a sense of relief that you just had that chance to talk, that you obviously had things to say and someone to listen to?
Yeah, it's nice having someone to talk to, especially someone who won't judge you and someone who won't, like, tell your mum or anything like that. Like, and it's completely confidential as well. So unless they think that you're at risk, then they keep everything to themselves. And also, like, in the sessions, you fill out, like, sheets. So you have, like, a visual, like look at how you're improving and your, like, feelings and stuff, and your emotions.
And what was it like when you realised that you did feel like you were improving in your emotions? Was that almost a relief?
Yeah, it was, like, a relief. And I was quite proud of myself because I didn't ever think I could do it, but I did.
And when you left those meetings, or rather when you were having those meetings and you were talking to Maureen and you were explaining some of your issues, was there a moment where you maybe said one thing and it kind of, you felt a sense of relief and it encouraged you to talk more? You don't have to tell us what it is by any stretch, but did you get a sense that was, ah, I can talk in this environment.
Yeah.
This is something which actually, I can see the point of it now. I can understand why my mum's been dragging me here.
Yeah, nearly every session there was something that, like, you just say and it just, you feel, like, relief in your body, like, after saying it. So, yeah, nearly every session, they were really, really helpful.
And what would you say to young people in your situation feeling some of the pressures that you were feeling in friends groups that maybe are taking them down the wrong path? What sort of advice would you say and give, given your experiences?
Just so, like, you will get through it, like no matter what, like, if it's counselling, if it's finding someone to talk to, like, you always come out the other side, like, better and happier.
Excellent. Do you feel like you're on a good footing now? You got a good year ahead of you now. You got your summer holidays first and foremost. You can enjoy that too. But already, given the work you've done and the speech you've written, I think your GCSEs, particularly your English, is going to go absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. No issues there whatsoever. Do you feel like you're in a positive place now?
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant stuff. We look forward to maybe catching up with you, Martha, mm-hmm. if we can, in a year or so's time after you've done your GCSEs. That'll be a breeze. And there's all this funding here now from the government, so maybe you could go into mental health counselling. That might be a profession for you.
I know.
We'll keep an eye on that one as well. Lynn, from the Health Watch point of view, when money does come into the system, we're hearing today about this extra cash which is becoming available, I guess one of the frustrations is waiting to see the money, to recruit the right people, to identify the best ways of spending that as well. Will that take some time to get going?
There's such a long lead time in any investment in health services. I mean, there's two announcements today. There's one about the mental health services, but there's one saying that we haven't met the targets that were set a couple of years ago for recruiting more GPs, because it just takes so long to get people through the system. And if you think about us having targets to increase the number of mental health nurses, you're probably talking about people younger than Martha who will be the people who will benefit, you know, it, from those extra targets, because you're talking about people choosing the right GCSEs, then going on to do A-levels, then choosing a degree course in nursing, which now, of course, they won't get a bursary for. So they'll have, you know, £40,000 worth of debt when they come out the other side. And it's not that attractive to people to go in, because you're going to have to do your degree and work alongside it, but also pay the fees. Whereas the bursary was a compensation for the fact that you were actually on the wards in the hospitals and clinics during your training. So it's a really, really long lead time. And what's coming down the road much quicker are the kind of cuts that have taken place to budgets, to the local CCGs and the local authority, who have previously funded these type of services that are on the, previously would have been on the fringe to support statutory services, but now really are starting to have to pick up the cuts to statutory services. And, you know, I know YPASS are doing whatever they can to get as many young people through the door as possible. They've introduced new ways of seeing people. They've opened the new centres. But, you know, they've also had 50% of their funding cut and had to make 50% of their staff redundant. And that's a real frustration, not just for those who've gone, but for those who remain, because they know that they're not going to be able to get to every young person who needs their help.
The funding, though, you would hope that it finds its way through the system and in the right way. People have been calling for the extra funding. Not everyone's a fan of Jeremy Hunt. Not everyone's a fan of this Conservative government. But do you take them at their word in terms of their investment in this? They said that they'd spend money. Theresa May said many times that she would take mental health very seriously. Is this a sign that it's maybe happening?
Well, you'd have to look at the numbers and see where the money's coming from, because sometimes cynically, I would suggest some of this is just rebadging of existing money that's in the system and shuffling the deck chairs, if you like, on the Titanic. So, you know, it's an announcement only come out today and I don't know the full details of it. I would hope that there is an investment in it, but it may be too little too late for some of our young people who are needing the services now. As I say, all of the services are operated by brilliant people. There's brilliant teachers who want to support young people in our schools. Just having the resources to do that.
And in terms of how it's communicated, how that, those sort of extra services, if they are indeed to be extra services, are available, presumably that's key as well, so that people within workplaces, people within everyday walks of life, become aware of where those services are available to them.
Yeah, it's about publicising where you can access them, and that's where I think the idea of bringing them into schools and into workplaces is a positive idea, so that people don't feel they have to go somewhere special and knock on a special door to access services. They're available to them where they are, and in schools are an ideal place for that access. And I know YPASS have outreach services that go into schools and see people in schools, but there's just not enough of it for all our schools.
Lynn, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you coming on. Lynn, who is Martha's mum, she's also Lynn Collins from the TUC and representative of Health Watch as well, based here in Liverpool. That's all the hats there.
That's all.
Multiple hat wearer. Martha, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We'll see you again very soon, hopefully. We wish mm-hmm. you all the best. Thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday. It's Radio City Talk. If you want to get involved on the programme today, you can drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. And we've mentioned him many times on the programme before, but Jake Mills' charity, Chasing the Stigma, launched a Hub of Hope very recently. If you want to go to their website, you can find local mental health services just associated to where your postcode is. All you need to do, type in your postcode. Go to hubofhope.co.uk and you can find hopefully appropriate mental health services where you live. Hubofhope.co.uk, operating right across the whole of the UK. It's Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
So my name's Mick Coyle. We're going to hear now about a project in regard to mental health that's happening in Liverpool that you might want to get involved in. Obviously, mental health is something we go big on here on Radio City Talk and will continue to go big on. And I'm very pleased to say the return of the Feeling Funny course is coming back to the city. The project manager is here in the studio to tell us all about it, as well as somebody who's just taken part in the latest course. Welcome to the studios. Helen Holden, great
yes.
to see you. And Alan Wright. Alan, great to see you too. Feeling Funny is a brilliant name. It sums up perfectly, I think, what this course is all about, because it's about tackling the stigma around mental yep. health, giving people with mental health issues an outlet, mm-hmm. but doing so through comedy, hence Feeling Funny.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whoever came up with that deserves a medal.
Well, it wasn't me.
just tell us about the course, because it's okay. been ongoing for some time now, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. We were really, it's the Comedy Trust in Liverpool who run these courses. And we got a grant from Liverpool Clinical Commissioning Group, just about got that out, to put on these courses for aimed at men specifically at the moment anyway, to try and tackle some of the issues, like you say, around people not feeling that comfortable expressing their feelings about whether it's they're feeling low or anxious or stressed. Particularly men are less likely to go and maybe access help traditionally or down the clinical route. So this is offering an alternative approach and something that can obviously build people's confidence, make them feel better in themselves, but also shine a light on the topic of mental health, which is still seen as quite a taboo for a lot of people. People can feel uncomfortable, and humour and laughter is a great way to tackle something like that, both in terms of making you feel better, but as I say, letting people get educated about it.
And I guess, though, the other thing is that for many people, mental health conditions might come with issues of stress
yeah.
and anxiety.
Yeah.
Is there not something about the Feeling Funny course, which, although, you know, uses humour to deal yeah. with the situation, it's yeah. only humorous if it's funny and you make people laugh. Is there not something in the back of your mind which thinks, well, actually, the idea of standing on a stage in front of people maybe who I don't know yeah. and having to make them laugh might actually be the most stressful thing that anyone might ever do?
No, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. It's a very specific and unique approach, and we recognise it's not going to be for everybody. And we recognise it's a nerve-wracking thing. It's no mean feat to get up and do stand-up comedy, as Alan will tell you in a minute. But I think for people who feel like they want to try something different and to try something that it's not just about working towards doing a performance in front of a live audience. That is the kind of pinnacle we work towards, but it's actually about enjoying the process and seeing how humour can actually make you feel better in the moment and being around like-minded people. So knowing that you're not the only one who might have been through depression or another condition, and to feel that kind of moral support, and there's the social side of the courses as well. But we give people the option of whether they do the final performance at the start. We say that's not mandatory, that's totally down to yourself. 99% of the time people want to do it by the end of it because they're feeling ready and they're feeling funny.
let's bring Alan in. Alan, how did you hear about the course? Was it recommended to you, or was it something that you sought out?
Introduced to it by my son, who'd started the week before, and I heard there was a couple of places still going. So as a fatherly figure, well, being his father, I went along to give him some support.
Was that you thinking, I'm funnier than him? If he can do it, I can do it too. Helen was telling us about the camaraderie and the sort of the social aspect of this one. This isn't walking into a clinic, sitting down in a group of people, you know, within a clinical environment. Tell us about the sort of the experience of being part of those meetings.
Well, it was, as Helen says, they're all like-minded people. They're all from various backgrounds, various age groups. But we all had a common factor, is that we'd all suffered with stress or depression. I've had clinical depression for the best part of 30 years. I didn't know I had it. I was diagnosed with it. People said, you can't be depressed, you're happy all the time. But I realised I was under this stress. But coming together at this group, you sort of felt an ease, like you shared that sort of burden, you know. You sort of have this collective stress and you sort of shared it out, you know. And it sort of, as Kellen says, in comedy, the depression has a taboo, it has a stigma, as you quite rightly say. And it was sort of to dispel that sort of theory, you know. And we found it through comedy. Mm. We were able to laugh raucously out loud, and it was a release. It's like screaming, you know.
Do you think that over that 30-year period that you were suffering with clinical depression, even though you may not have had it actually diagnosed, were you just naturally finding other outlets along that time, or were you just suffering along for three decades, if you like, before you found something which is, well, a little bit outside the norm?
Well, I had to sort of soldier on. My dad was from the old school. He said you just pull yourself together sort of thing, you know, get out there, put a smile on your face and get your job done, you know. Plus, I had a family to bring up, and apart from the stress and strains of that, there was the monetary problems that everyone suffered as well, you know. So, but I sort of didn't have the time to sort of think of myself. It was more or less others I was putting forward. But, I felt the strain at the end.
And when you think about, right, what am I going to talk about? What am I going to make jokes about? Do you think, well, can I get a bit of material out of the mental health problems that I've been suffering? Or do you go completely outside the box and do Donald Trump jokes and everything in between?
No, that was we were sort of self-effacing. We sort of took the mickey out of each other and ourselves, you know. Nothing was a subject they couldn't touch, but, you know, within limits, of course. But depression and things like that was a core of some of the jokes that were on hand on our final performance.
Everyone's been as well in a comedy club where they've had a joke and something's gone quite near to a knuckle because it's touching on a topic which might have been maybe big in the news. I wonder whether or not within a mental health environment, that's actually quite a positive thing where you can almost laugh at you. You think, well, I know that this is the focus of the joke, so really I can break the taboo if I like.
Yeah, that's quite right. Yeah. I think I started off with my comedy routine. Is that my wife said that she didn't think I had depression, but she thought I was a carrier. You know,
that's a good one. Yeah, and that's the first 10 seconds, right? The set itself, then, that you were doing. Yeah, what were you a 5-minute set? Was it you were building up to?
Well, it started off as 5 minutes, and it sort of multiplied to 10. It sort of was funny. We wanted to roll, and that was it. You know, couldn't stop.
Helen Allen's story there, 3 decades of clinical depression, and you know, just soldiering on through and then finding themselves in that environment. What sort of other people might find themselves on this course, the cohort you've got at the moment, the cohort that you're due to sign up?
I think the point is it's about trying to recognise that mental health issues affect anyone at any age, from any background. Obviously, some people are more likely maybe to suffer with something. But mental health issues don't discriminate against people. So it's brilliant to actually bring people together, like Alan said, from different backgrounds and different ages, because it's seeing that, you know, there's support out there, because there is clinical support out there and there's some great groups and charities that work to support people with mental health issues. But it's also knowing that, as I said before, you're not alone. You're not, you don't have to suffer alone. And people, you know, as I say, have got different issues. So people with physical health problems can often then experience a mental health issue. The two often go hand in hand, but are often seen in isolation, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So it's, you know, people from different parts of Liverpool, people who might not even be from Liverpool. There was a guy on the last course from London, but living in Liverpool. Yeah. So it's good to know that, again, people from all over the country can be experiencing these problems, and might have, for some people, are, you know, our course is the first port of call to actually go and getting any help whatsoever. We can signpost on people onto other support groups after the course is finished.
Well, I was going to ask you about this. So we've got Helen Holden with us in the studio from the Comedy Trust, and we've got Alan Wright, who's taken part in the latest Feeling Funny course. You run this course, and you've got the next one coming up from the 15th of August.
Yeah.
That people can sign up for. It's absolutely free to take part, and you've got a number of places available. We'll give people the details about how they can sign themselves up or pass on the information to somebody else. But I wanted to ask you about what happens at the end, because of course this comes from a clinical commissioning group, so there's the funding is a medical one, but I don't think you're not a doctor.
No.
But at the end of the course, how important is it for you to make sure that they go, well, you've done this now, but obviously everyone's on a journey. Everyone's on a journey with their own mental health as well. So what sort of things are you able to then offer them in terms of where they might turn to next?
Yeah, so we can signpost people. So we have a list of like local organisations, other groups that are out there that can support people with their mental well-being, or whether it's, as it might be something to do with finding a new hobby or a skill. For some people, doing the comedy over the 6 weeks, over the course, they do it and that's all they want to do. They want the experience, and it's a kind of, you know, something to tick off and say, I've done stand-up comedy once. For other people, this could be the start of a journey that they go on and do other gigs, and some of our previous participants have done that. But we will give people a list of local organisations and national charities that they can get support with their for their mental health and well-being. We also started a monthly club off the back of these courses, so it's the Feeling Funny Club. Anyone who's taken part in a course can come along to that. It's free. We do have to demonstrate that these courses are having a positive impact on someone's mental health. So we have to do the, you know, we have to get feedback, and we have to do some monitoring and some of the stuff that's a little bit more intrusive. But it's not shared, or it's completely confidential. It's just to show funders that these things are really important, non-medical approaches to helping people with their mental health and well-being are vital in this current climate as well, because other services are getting cut. So we can, you know, we make sure we stay in touch with people, we invite them to the monthly club, tell them about other events and opportunities as well. So once they've been part of the Feeling Funny course, they're part of the kind of Comedy Trust community, if you like, and we're looking to get more funding to carry these on if we can.
Brilliant stuff. Let's get my favourite type of evidence, anecdotal evidence. From Alan.
Yeah.
So what's your feedback from what you're experiencing so far and what you've experienced on the course in terms of its value to you as an individual?
Yeah, well, it was marvellous. As I say, I only went along to support my son to start with, but I got really into it. And everyone was supporting each other. That was the thing. Nobody was in competition with each other. But at the end of the day, on the final day, we were all showing off. We all wanted the appreciation. We all loved the applause. We were back to little children again, you know.
Did you sit down and write some jokes down?
Yeah, there were some jokes down, but there was actually some stuff which came from personal experience, you know. And it was able to bring that out, and people found it funny, so... So it went down rather well. Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. And what do you plan to do something next? Do you want to get involved? Do you look for open mic nights now? Just the idea of getting up and doing a few minutes set, just to, you know, keep the material fresh.
Well, I feel pretty confident in doing it now, and as I say, it gets me out. I wasn't getting out in the last 20 years. It was only for events such as birthdays, Christmas, etc. But I didn't have a social life, so to be. But this has been a healthy distraction and very interesting, you know. And I definitely consider doing it again. Yeah,
because 30 years is a long time, isn't it?
Yeah,
to be having one particular mindset. Do you feel like that course has changed your mindset in terms of how you view your own mental health and how you view you as a person?
Yeah, as I say, it was sort of a release, like a valve, you know, when I went onto stage. I was tense to start with, but after a while, it just flowed and it just came out, and I felt great, you know, at the end of it.
And the organisers of the course hold your hand when required.
Oh, yes.
Tell you when you're not funny when required.
Oh, yes. They're very supportive, yeah.
People want to sign up to the latest Feeling Funny course. Gets underway from the 15th of August, and it's based at Merseyside Youth Association. Hanover Street, they're still on Hanover?
It's Hanover Street,
Hanover Street. And you can email Helen, and you can ask to take part. And at that moment, my screen goes black. Here we go. It's back on. Helen@thecomedytrust.com is the email address if you want to email Helen and find out a little bit more about the course. And it runs essentially weekly until the end of September.
Yeah, about the 26th of September we finish.
With an optional show at the end.
An optional show at the end, yes.
Helen@thecomedytrust.com. And also on the Comedy Trust website, there's a link to the Feeling Funny section as well. You can see the videos of people who've done sets, which is brilliant, as part of Liverpool Comedy Festival as well. All the dates are on there as well, and a whole host of different sections about how people have gone through and their own experiences through Feeling Funny as well. Ellen, it's a great idea. And if people are thinking, but I'm not very funny. I like comedy, but I'm not very funny. Are you expecting, you know, everyone to be like Michael McIntyre and Stuart Lee walking in there?
Not at all. I mean, if they're free and they want to come on the course, the more they're welcome to. But it's a beginner's level course. So it's about understanding that everybody has the potential to be funny. And as I say, it's about enjoying the experience along the way. I meant to say as well, the courses are led by local and professional comedian stand-up Avery, Sam Avery. That was a Freudian slip, wasn't it? And he's a great, you know, he's a great tutor. He really puts people at ease. He gives people the direction and support that they need to create a routine. And it's not just about telling jokes. I mean, telling jokes is funny, but it, as Alan said, the personal experiences and anecdotes that people can come up with, anyone's got the potential to do that. And humour is such a subjective, and comedy subjective thing, isn't it? So there can be humour found in pretty much anything. But I would say to people, if you've even just got a little kind of, you know, desire to see what it's like, honestly, get in touch, because it's a great opportunity. The courses are free. As I say, they're just for men at the moment. You know, it's not to say that women aren't funny or women don't suffer with mental health issues, but that's just where it's a targeted funding project that we're running. So it'd be great to hear from some people.
Helen@thecomedytrust.com if you want to get involved. Guys, thank you for your time. Thank you for your time. Alan, we wish you all the best in terms of your journey, your comedy career as well.
Thanks very much, Mick.
The Palladium, you know.
Palladium Bingo Hall.
Where do you want to be? Do you want to take it further comedy-wise now?
Well, I'm starting at a very old age of 62 now, you know, so perhaps it's behind me. But, I enjoyed the experience. And if they have a veterans show, then I'll take a part in that.
Alan, thank you for your time. Alan Wright joined us on the programme. Helen Holden, Project Manager, thank you for your time too. Thanks, thecomedytrust.com for all the information about the Feeling Funny project.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.